Community Corner is brought to you by JN Foundation, impacting communities through innovation and inspiring Jamaicans to find a way.
Oh, I know a place we can carry on. Oh, I know a place we can carry on. Come children, we must carry on now. We can carry on.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Talking History on Nationwide 90 FM. We are into Community Corner, as you would have picked up from that introduction. Last week in Community Corner, we spoke to Mr. Paris Leo Ayiz Sr., the chairman of the Jamaica National Foundation, about life growing up in St. Thomas. Remember that Dr. Gemma wrote the history of St. Thomas, and we heard from her before. But we thought we'd hear from somebody else who has, you know, actually local knowledge about growing up in St. Thomas, just to add the documented history with the oral history, which we all know is ideal. This week, we go back to Dr. Jenny Gemma, the researcher for St. Elizabeth in the Jamaica National Parish Histories Project. Let me just give you some context for those who have never heard about this before. You're a first-time listener. Since its inception in the year 1874, the Jamaica National Group, formerly Jamaica National Building Society, has been vested in a social mission to contribute to nation building. The mandate of the JN Foundation remains the same to this day. The JN Group understands the importance of cultural vitality and the preservation of the history of its members. Jamaica has a rich cultural heritage, as we all know, and a rich history, which unites people from faraway lands and whose customs collectively form the cultural heritage of the Jamaican people. In 2015, the JN Foundation embarked on a mission to empower Jamaicans by creating and implementing the Parish Histories of Jamaica project. The ultimate goal of this project is to strengthen the social connectedness, improve the cultural awareness, and increase the community involvement of the Jamaican people. And by the involvement of the Jamaican people, you can see, if you think about the previous programs, where there's a mix, the researcher did oral history, but also people from the community have been talking to us. And if you go to the JN website, you will see some of those conversations that they've had with people. Now, previous podcasts for Community Corner can be found on the Jamaica National webpage, as well as on the Talking History Facebook page. So if you missed previous ones with Dr. Gemmott and Professor Satchel, you can go and look for them. So this week, we're back with Dr. Gemmott. And Dr. Gemmott, thank you so much for your generosity in being on Talking History for the third time in such a short space of time.
Very welcome, Vareen.
Yes. I start, though, before we run to the parish history, I start by asking you, how are you, my sister? How are you in this time of COVID? How are you and your family doing?
Well, thank you very much for that, Professor Shepherd. We are really trying to stay optimistic, safe, healthy. It's a little bit challenging from time to time, but we're here and we're coping. Thank you very much. And I hope we see you.
Yes, Jenny, we are trying our best, you know, So here we are talking about another parish you have completed. But right. I have to ask you again, where did you get the time and energy to take on St. Bess?
Yes, indeed. Well, as you know, it's the second largest parish. Our listeners may not know this, but it's the second largest parish in Jamaica. And it has a history which is in keeping with the size and the many different geographical divisions.
Since you speak about the size, when this parish was established, which other parishes had to give up space to create it?
Actually, you know, none. It was the other way around, if I could.
Oh, tell us about that.
St. Elizabeth was established in 1670. Mm-hmm. At that time, the parishes of Westmoreland to the west, Westmoreland and Hanover to the west of St. Elizabeth did not exist. Mm-hmm. In fact, St. Elizabeth was one large parish which stretched all the way to Negril Point. Mm-hmm. And even Manchester did not exist on the eastern side of St. Elizabeth. So really, it occupied a large space. Mm-hmm. So it did not have to give up any territory, but certainly held the pride of place by dominating virtually the entire southwestern coast.
Okay. Now, I always ask this. Are there competing narratives about how the parish got its names? And if so, what are they? And what is the true story?
Okay, actually, this one was pretty straightforward. As far as the research indicates, the parish was named after the wife of the governor, Sir Thomas Modiford, at the time of the birth of St. Elizabeth. The parish was named for his wife, Elizabeth, Lady Modiford. I did not come across any other indications as to other explanations.
Well, I have to tell you, Jenny, that I was playing, just trying to be light with our Facebook friends in this time of so much sadness going around.
Uh-huh.
I asked, if you were asked to rename your parish of birth, what name would you give it? There were two comments for St. Elizabeth. So I want to just tell you and the listeners what some people said. Let's see what they said. They would have named St. Elizabeth. So Ricardo Dunkley said, Tamale. And Stanley Redford said, Ashanti, Akompong, or Kojo. And Kevin Gale said, Breadland. I don't know what if you want to comment on those. I mean, we're just sort of having fun with it because...
Yes.
Over the weeks, we have been hearing that is all of them colonizers, you know, they give their name to themselves, them, you know, Kombolo. And people have got asked, Faye Ellington, what that mean, Kombolo. And their sister, brother, whatever, wife.
Or birthplace in England.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So that's why, I mean, each parish, yeah. I keep asking. Remember that, I don't know if you listened to the one with Verant, but they said St. Mary should be Tapioca. Or some indigenous woman's name, you know?
Uh-huh. Some of the comments are really interesting. But in particular, the person who wanted the parish to be named Akompong or Kojo. Well, you know, at least we are thankful that the northern part of the parish has already captured that name in the form of the Maroon.
Yes.
Village of Akompong.
Now, why was the capital called Black River?
Yeah, some interesting things there. And just to quickly let your listeners know that according to the research again, you know, interestingly, two things. The capital was not initially called Black River, and neither was the Black River called the Black River. In fact, as we all know, St. Elizabeth has it's home to the Great Morass, a huge swampy area, which is home to wildlife, plant life, and so on, all sorts of protected species. But it also encouraged mosquitoes. Hence, when the few settlers settled down in what we became familiar with as Black River, they were affected by diseases, mosquito-borne diseases, and so on. So the first name given to the little town that would become Black River was Gravesend. Gravesend.
Gravesend.
Grave, yes, a grave. Because they are dying, like, you know, left, right.
From mosquito.
Yes, from the disease. So that name was later on changed to Black River. The river itself was first of all named Black River, and then, of course, the settlement named Black River after. Now, to cut to the chase, why was the river called Black River and the town subsequently given that name? And this was a simple explanation, actually, because over time, there were a lot of mahogany trees which had been growing along the banks of the river. And the decay falling from those trees accumulated at the bottom of the river, therefore giving it a very dark appearance, even though the water was clear. So,
okay.
And the harbor, of course, was named Black River Harbor. It was first Gravesend as well. Gravesend Harbour. That is important, I think.
It's important because the last thing I wanted to hear is that it's one of those other things that associated Black people that they have to name Black.
No. This was
not in this case. Okay.
No. This was reflection.
thanks to Jah for that. All right. You were saying
indigenous situation. Yes, okay. Indeed. Black River was not the first capital of St. Elizabeth. Most people may not realize this, but La Covia was the first capital of St. Elizabeth. Meaning, in fact, that all of the administrative functions, meeting of courthouse, meeting of vestry, all the official functions took place there. And why? Because La Covia was actually in the middle of a significant settlement by estate owners, livestock property owners, all surrounded La Covia. And they got their goods down to the Black River by sending them in small boats called lighters. La Covia would be like the collection point, sent the things along the river and down to Black River itself, Black River Harbor, rather, where they were then and vice versa for incoming things or goods.
When did it become the capital?
Well, I think in 1773, thereabouts, it became the capital. And it became the capital only because I think trade was becoming so hectic in Black River. That is the wealth, the property of the little settlement was growing, and, you know, they figured it was time.
Okay. And of course, we know that it was a main harbor in that parish for slavers. Some people call them slave ships, but I call them slavers. Were there any other ports which received these ships?
Absolutely not. Of slavery. And in fact, not until the 20th century, until the middle of the 20th century, there were no other ports dealt with imports and exports.
Okay.
So go back to your question. In fact, the only other port that emerged in the 1950s was Port Kaiser, and this was specifically built for the export of bauxite and aluminum.
Okay.
But during our period, the earlier period, Black River Harbor was the sole recipient.
Okay. I don't know if this is a myth or anything, but in 2015... Well, I went there twice to pay respects to our ancestors who arrived there in 1781 on the Zong.
Yes.
And some of us went along the river to, you know, throw flowers and libation and so. But I didn't want to go too close, to be honest with you. So I had to throw my flowers really far and stand way back because I heard that crocodiles are in the river. Is that true?
Well, actually, now remember, the river flows for a long time throughout the parish. And the short answer to your question is yes, but not necessarily in Black River, the town of Black River itself. The crocodile.
No, I'm talking about the harbor. I'm talking about the harbor.
Well, I am. I'm not aware of that. But I do.
I wasn't taking any chances. I stay far and throw my flowers and still pay my respects.
Thank you so much, Jenny. I do hate to leave it here, but more on St. Elizabeth next week.
Community Corner was brought to you by JN Foundation, impacting communities through innovation and inspiring Jamaicans to find a way.
That's it, listeners. Thank you so much for tuning into Talking History today. Thanks to all who participated in the program. Thanks to our technical operator, David McNeish. Thanks to our production assistants, Tolan Thomas and Mikael Hilton. Join us next week for another Talking History program right here on Nationwide 90 FM. And listen to a repeat of the show at 8:30 p.m. on Monday. And remember, as Marcus Garvey said, history is the landmark by which we are directed into the true course of life. So you have to do history. So walk good, everyone. And to all mothers, I say enjoy your day when it comes on Sunday the 10th. Children, find innovative ways to give thanks to your mothers. And may I just say how much I miss my mother, because she's gone 2 years now. Walk good, everyone.
We refuse to be what you wanted us to be.